Okay, last episode we talked about serotonin development and the sensory maps. We talked about how serotonin in this time frame here has huge implications, and it's kind of like Michelangelo to the thalamo cortex. Every time the thalamus speaks up to the cortex area, we specifically highlighted S1, the somatosensory area, which is heavily involved with this VP region of the thalamus. Ventral posterior will speak up to this somatosensory area, has strong connections with this feed forward feedback loop. Thalamocortex cortex up to the S1, and then corticothalamic, the layer six of these many columns, back down to the thalamus. It's just constantly updating. But I really want to highlight that serotonin's role here isn't limited to these areas. It's also areas across the entire cortex. This S1 is mostly studied because it's easier because of this homunculus. Okay? So serotonin, for what we're going to do today, is also involved, but we're going to add in the thyroid from the mother because this has huge implications. Has huge implications of autism risk in this time frame. So we talked about, before I erase all of these are the many columns, right? And then another many column, and we drew this out as diffused. So I'm going to erase most of this. Remember, this is the crossover of who's making the serotonin, who's providing the serotonin, maternal and fetus. Okay, because this is all happening before the dorsal raphe, or the raphe less specifically, is developed, which is the brain's sources of serotonin. So let's see. I don't think we'll need all of this. I kind of wish this was different though. And we're not going to talk about sensory maps so much. We're going to add something here. We're going to add thyroid and development. Okay, so which episodes? There's a mini episode back in last December, December 2024. Yeah, it's about 8 minutes long. It's about talking about how hypothyroid is a biomarker for Parkinson's and autism risk. And it's undisputed and it's easy to fix. How many people know about it? And there's another episode, Autism and Parkinson's, right after that, right about the time frame of that. And then there are several guest episodes. There's one with Kristen Lyall from AJ Drexel talking about modifiable risk factors for autism. She's one of the 13 or 14 special grants received from the NIH to study autism again. But hers, with these modifiable risk factors, is the way to go. How do you reduce the autism? But those other ones with genetics and things, it's exhausted. So we have the Kristen Lyall episode, and we have three episodes with Nicole Rincon, who is a researcher and a physician's assistant at Rasagnol's clinic with Dan Rasagnol and Richard Fry. So maybe see the Richard Fry episodes, plural, as well. So we're going to have to thread in how thyroid and serotonin is developing the cells and the brain of the fetus right here. These are very underrated, I think. So I don't know how we're going to exactly do this, but we need to understand what thyroid, where it comes from, and what it's trying to accomplish. Remember, this is all from the mother. The fetus isn't making its own thyroid. It's not making its own T4 and T3. What's very specific about this is tyrosine. I want you side by side, up and down. Tyrosine Then you have the tyrosine ACE, remember ASE, so it, the enzyme. And then tyrosine is very powerful. It makes a lot of different things. We're going to talk about the dopamine and substantia nigra too because of the Parkinson's and heavily involved with autism. So this will make thyroxine, things like L-DOPA, which is T3, T4, thyroxine, T3, T4. The 4 and 3 is iodine. Another way to kind of mitigate autism risk factors, having these checked. If you're thinking about having a child, these should be checked. You can easily do this. And then L-DOPA makes dopamine. Huge, huge implications with muscles and movement, not just the cellular level, not just like wanting and liking. Also makes norepinephrine, and melanin. What is this? What? Melanin. Wild. So, tyrosine is the main protein, and tryptophan. These two are those aromatic amino acids, which means they have this. That's a benzene ring. Those are UV light antennas. I'm going to tell you something, a little self-disclosure here. I have autoimmune problems. I've had hypothyroidism, Hashimoto's, from essentially 2005 to about 2024. And I was on medication for it because that was the only way. April 2023, I learned about a neurosurgeon, kind of a quantum physics, kind of a decentralized MD here, who says these things require UV light. So I increased my exposure to sunlight both in the morning and midday. And I was like, I'm not going to take the hypothyroidism anymore. Levothyroxine is on 150 micrograms. It's a pretty high dose. 15, 20, 20 years almost. And I stopped taking it. And then I had lab works done. And I no longer needed it because my ranges, the TSH, and then the other one, T4, T3, maybe it's called. I don't know. These are easy checks. Gone. Both in range without medication. And I could not do that for 15, nearly 20 years. So this tells me something about our modern environments and not getting sunlight. And this is huge because of developing here. So these three, tyrosine, tryptophan, and phenylalanine, have those benzene rings, okay? It's huge for this and all of these. So some more unknown roles here about the cell, okay? Serotonin, we know, makes all of these connections, okay? We covered that. Good. I'm not going to go back into that. But I do want to say that we want to kind of put these side by side, I think, and talk about, be able to see a specific cell here and talk about what serotonin is doing and what thyroid is doing for that specific cell. So let's just draw a generic cell here. It doesn't have to be perfect, okay? I just want us to be able to see the cell body, and the connections.
It's not bad,
I guess. I don't know. We'll have to make it work. Serotonin comes on pretty fast, okay? Remember, right around neurulation for neurogenesis, cell differentiation, you know, cells divide, and then they differentiate. They become specialized cells. What is the role of that specific cell after it proliferates? Has to have a job. Serotonin is kind of big on that. And then it will help it migrate. Where does it need to go once it becomes a specific cell? Right? And that's why we have these clusters and nuclei. The things like the thalamus. Well, all of those things are, they'll migrate to and make the thalamus. Thyroid here has similar kind of roles here, but a little bit later, about week 16 or so, once the brain is developing and all of these regions are kind of coming to, thyroid will help take over and do neurodifferentiation and the migration, and it will kind of mature the cell, specifically T3. Okay, so T3 will kind of take over this area right here, kind of like the cell body and all of those crucial organelles. Things like mitochondria and the soma and things. T3's role here for developing the cell right here is the most important thing. It's non-negotiable. And then things like insulin is probably second for the importance of developing the cell here for like things like survival. Now, there's a lot to be said. You can find anywhere that the metabolic condition of the maternal is a huge risk factor for autism. And it's T3 and her insulin growth factors, things like that, that are kind of implicating this area right here. Now, this is just a specific cell, but how many cells are going to be implicated? Because another role here is things like myelination. So the mother's T3 will provide energy for this up until the time the fetus can make its own, which is about weeks 16 to 20. So we have serotonin early, to develop all of this, all of these maps and the cortex, the thalamus to the cortex roles. Remember, thalamus is a workhorse. And then the thyroid, her thyroid, specifically the T3, because this is the sequence. It makes T4, which is kind of thyroxine, and then T3. Now, you can look up the nomenclature to T3. I'm not going to spell it out. I can barely spell melanin. So the thyroid here, T3, is huge for this kind of area, for billions of cells. And then serotonin is more responsible for things like this, things like the dendrites and spines. Remember, we extracted a specific spine. That spine will mean the same thing every time. Every time a spine receives a connection, it's the same meaning every time. So serotonin's role with the specific cell is more of this green area, more of these connections, more of the axons and things. Remember that make up the neurophil that provides communication. So serotonin and thyroid are the two biggest factors here for cell development. And it's a little bit unknown. Mainly, I think, because of this little epoch here before delivery isn't studied enough. It's just not well understood. But we can see like the studies from UC San Diego about the size of the brain organelle. UC San Diego early last year in 2024 now, the size of the brain organelle will predict severity of socialness in the autistic child. And they found this on 2 months old, roughly 2 months old. it's UC San Diego, they can have like this ability to track that specific child to ages 3, 4, whatever. And does this specific child with the altered brain organelle size have severities with socialness, and are they so-called fit into this autistic phenotype? It's similar to the study that I talk about frequently about the salience network. Remember, that's what these were. You have the ACC, anterior cingulate cortex, which is deep in the medial prefrontal cortex, and then the insula, which is lateral. These make up, those are the two critical hubs for the salience network. These two regions here will bias our attention kind of more powerfully than anything. That's why they're the hubs of the salience network. And then you have other regions, mostly subcortical, things like VTA, the raphe, hippocampus, amygdala, so forth, things like that. So that study from UCLA with the salience network was found on 6 weeks old. The study from UC San Diego was found on 2 months old. San Diego does a lot of good research here, but nothing is really done about it. Ezekiel Ben-Ari does a lot of good stuff here. He has an episode. He's one of my first guests. He's the one that found that, well, he's kind of famous for inhibition during this time frame is excitatory. Remember, we talk a lot about excitation, inhibition. That might be the central theme of the autistic phenotype. And during this period that allows for massive growth here, we don't have inhibition so much. It's all excitation up until like perinatal. So this role here with the thyroid and the mother is a huge risk factor for developing autism. It should be well known. It should be a checklist. The kind of the conflict is, you take the hypothyroidism medication. If you want to mitigate the risk factors for autism, yes, probably. But our environments are horrible, absolutely horrible for synthesizing proteins like this. Why? Because of things like this. Exposure to things like this. This isolated blue light will destroy and not allow these to kind of synthesize properly. And another thing about this is the myelination. Serotonin and thyroid has huge implications for myelination. So we just want to talk about that one specific cell, but you can extract any cell and it's going to have implications, because serotonin is the master kind of architect. It's the Michelangelo of all of these connections, all of them, especially with sensation. And then T3 is the master kind of engineer, Michelangelo's right-hand man, of developing this cell. Because this cell, if we're going to expand or create St. Peter's Basilica, this specific cell is a specific block. Okay, now each specific block is very important. Sure, you might have some deficiencies with a block and it can kind of mix in. The other blocks can kind of take over and help it out. Even if it's visual, it doesn't look as good. You might not see it. The autistic probably will because of the attention to detail, but that's a different story. That's another episode coming soon. So how is hypothyroidism is biomarker for autism and Parkinson's?
That's too clustered.
Hypothyroidism is a biomarker for autism and Parkinson's. What's the role with Parkinson's? Well, we've talked a lot about the basal ganglia. We talked a lot about the mesencephalon. We talk a lot about melanin more than probably most, thanks to Jack Cruz. You know El Dopa. You probably know about Oliver Sacks and Robin Williams and Rude Awakenings with El Dopa. And we drew out, let's just extract this out right here. Let's just take this area right here and kind of make it bigger. What area is this? The mesencephalon. So, let's talk about, I'm just going to have to overhead it. Remember, if this is the brainstem, we're going to just take a slice out and look at it like this from the top down, okay? Because that's the best way of looking down through the brainstem, through the spine, because it's just so packed into this small area. So if we extract out the mesencephalon at this view, remember, because you can zoom in or out, you can go vertical as much as you want, and this will change drastically as you're moving up and down the brainstem and spine, because this is packed full of things. But if you just want to look at where we're going, we drew this out, I think, in the Neurolation episode, okay?
So, bud.
So we have the substantia nigra here, these black spots, because it's full of neuromelanin, it's full of dopamine. Then we have the third and fourth cranial nerves, ocular motor and trochlear, Edinger-Westphal. And then fifth cranial nerve is down through here. Then we have the medial geniculate nucleus here, which is the relay station for audition. And then we have the superior colliculus here, which are the relay stations for vision. The lemniscus here, remember the auditory brainstem response. So we're just going to look at this area right here. The para-aqueductal gray is here. Remember serotonin. The RAFA is down through here, this red mark here. So as you move up and down, you can see the RAFA. But we're going to mainly talk about the substantia nigra. Remember the differences between the substantia nigra in a healthy versus a Parkinson's patient. You can't see this black. This black is gone. It's gone because this is gone. And remember, the mesencephalon is all of these subcortical areas are surrounding this, the lateral and third ventricle, the ventricular system. Remember, the caudate nucleus actually pushes in on these lateral ventriculars. So there's a lot of power here. There's a lot of special nuclei that formed around this because there's a lot of water. And a thing about developing this cell is it needs a lot of water. A huge part of what's going on here is it's interacting with water, especially melanin. And the T3, remember, it's making organelles, mitochondria. If you ever look at the mitochondria, you can see things like kind of looks like this. Inner mitochondrial membrane. And these are complexes. 1, 2, 3, 4. And then the FOA, complex 5, where ATP is made. cytochrome C oxidase here. This fourth one is where we make water, H2O. Remember, electrons are coming in. This is the electron transport chain. And it's pumping electrons through this membrane and hydrogen out. Then this FO head will take the hydrogen, pump it back through, and make ATP. ADP. Whoa. ADP to ATP. It's the amount of phosphorus. Adenosine and the amount of phosphorus there. Because this is oxidative phosphorylation. Oxygen. Okay, so this area right here is huge for water. And melanin and water, whenever they're coupled, is the most probably the most powerful things that can provide energy here, especially here. That's why you want this dark. You want that dark, remember, because this is the source of what modulates the basal ganglia. And this is a huge part about autism and Parkinson's is the basal ganglia, because these will speak up and kind of conduct. If we want to zoom in here, we have the reticulata and then compacta pars, if you want to get down to the nomenclature of it, okay? Reticulata is GABA, inhibition. It's stopping, okay? Pars compacta is the dopamine. We have two major sources of dopamine in the brain here. Pars compacta from the substantia nigra, and then another area in the brainstem, the ventral tegmental area. It's also using a lot of power and dopamine in water. So this is more for conducting the basal ganglia, go, no go. Whenever we have autism and Parkinson's, this is off. Undisputed. We have a lot of episodes on the basal ganglia, and Dr. Robert Melello talked about the basal ganglia quite in good detail. We could have went on and on, to be honest. But this is off. If you want to compare a normal substantia nigra versus Parkinson's, it looks like this much contrast. Dark, nothing. Because there's a loss of this. A loss of this will mean a loss of this and a loss of dopamine. Okay, so I'll just say a loss of melanin will mean a loss of dopamine or vice versa. A loss of dopamine, you're going to have awkward movements. You're not going to have the ability to orchestrate brain circuitry because dopamine and serotonin are neuromodulators. They're conductors to a huge orchestra. If dopamine is off, it cannot conduct the orchestra. It's like different sections of the instruments are playing off timing. And if they're off timing, if it's an orchestra, it's going to be awful. Orchestras and the brain is all about space-time. So hypothyroidism, because of tyrosine, will make thyroxine and L-DOPA. So you have the loss of T3, and then you have the loss of dopamine and melanin. Will get you Parkinson's, and it will get you autism. Now you think about things like this or this, things like these movements with the dinosaur hands and things. Right there. So the biggest takeaway here today is thyroid. Hypothyroidism is an easy biomarker for autism and Parkinson's. It is the easiest. If you don't know, now you do know, but you should know.